When Washington voters approved Initiative 502 legalizing recreational marijuana, they also approved using tax revenue for drug education. The law legalizing marijuana set aside 15% of that tax revenue for evidence-based prevention programs for middle school and high school students. Although cannabis is considered less harmful than many other illegal drugs, it's not harmless, particularly for young people. But are those programs for middle school and high school students going to actually get that money? Kevin Haggerty is director of the Social Development Research Group at the University of Washington School of Social Work. He told KUOW's Amy Radel that though the state budget isn't yet final, there are signs that those tax revenues could be diverted elsewhere.
What we do see is less of an emphasis on the prevention resources that were spelled out in I-502 in what I've seen from both the House and the Senate sides of the budget, and more supplanting of dollars. So using the I-502 funds to replace existing money rather than add to new treatment slots or new prevention programs.
Roger Rothman is professor emeritus at the University of Washington, and he spent years studying the effects of marijuana. He also worked to help pass I-502, legalizing recreational marijuana. Welcome to The Record.
Thanks, Ross.
So what does it mean for public health if the state legislature diverts funding intended for education about marijuana to other purposes?
Yeah, so marijuana is not a harmless drug by any means. However, prohibition of marijuana was not succeeding in adequately informing people about the risks and harms. It was time to regulate marijuana, but it was time to do it smartly. And I-502 was written with that kind of focus. It allocated a substantial amount of the new tax revenues to education and prevention and treatment and research and evaluating the law's impact. And what's unfortunate is that at a time when the legislature is grappling with other competing needs, that we see some people in the legislature wanting to strip all of those public health new revenues from 502 to other purposes.
What impact do you think it would have on public health if part of the money derived from the sale of marijuana doesn't go into education and prevention and research?
You know, with marijuana being more readily available, with more people using marijuana and probably more people using it more regularly, there are risks. There are risks to public safety in terms of driving under the influence. There are certainly risks to young people who use marijuana and use it regularly. There's the issue of addiction to marijuana among adults who use it and use it heavily. And then there are some of the psychiatric consequences of very heavy use and very heavy use of high-potency products. So I suspect if we don't effectively use the provisions of I-502 to educate consumers, we'll see greater numbers of people in trouble in terms of health, in terms of safety, in terms of addiction.
Even if we do have the money, do we know how to effectively educate young people?
We've made a lot of mistakes on the road to consumer education about tobacco and alcohol and marijuana. Programs that really focus on warnings of dangers and a lot of judgment are just not effective, even though the people who develop those kinds of educational programs think that they might be. But when educational efforts are carefully tailored to be able to identify who is it that we're trying to influence and what is it that they're wanting to think differently or do differently or believe differently, often we can be very effective in shaping young people and adult attitudes and behavior. And I'll give you an example. I think some of the greatest successes are in the tobacco field. We know an awful lot about how to shape norms and how to shape behavior. One of our problems, however, is when we learn how to do it effectively, we sometimes turn away from adequately funding what actually will work. And I think the same is going to be the case with marijuana. We know a great deal about how to affect marijuana attitudes and behavior, and we have to spend the money in order to do it.
You spent many years researching marijuana use, and the White House just this week announced that it's taking off one of the requirements that some say will make it a lot easier to do this kind of research, which is fairly restricted now. What kind of restrictions did you work under, and how might lifting those restrictions benefit marijuana research?
during the decades in which I was studying marijuana, the funding agencies, the federal funding agencies, were very interested in studies that looked at the dangers and the harms. They were particularly interested in my field, marijuana addiction. What they were not interested in were the potential benefits of marijuana, either in the medical area to treat certain diseases, or benefits just enhancing the quality of life for people. So I think with this new era coming on, we'll see a more balanced way of looking at marijuana from researchers, not only focusing on dangers and harms, but also looking at benefits and determining, you know, what's myth and what actually can be documented as benefits.
Roger Rothman, professor emeritus at the University of Washington. He spent many years studying the effects of marijuana, and he also helped work to pass I-502, legalizing recreational marijuana.